look, I got some cool pugs. Elf pugs. Remember Elf? He's back in pug form.
This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 78, featuring Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and Jen Siciliano.
And now the adventures of Nick and Willikins.
Last time, you'll remember, young Gadabout Nick adopted a mangy little dog, which, in a fit of creativity, he named Willikins. Meanwhile, Willikins, the butler, not the dog, was fetching the car for Nick and Willikins. The dog, not the... Man, this is confusing.
Not to me!
Fine. And then this happened.
Who's a good Willikins? You are. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Don't argue with me, Willikins. You're almost as bad as Willikins.
There you are, sir. One extremely expensive automobile encrusted with jewels. You'll also notice the fine silk seatbelts.
Is this rich Corinthian leather, Willikins? Not you.
Better, sir. It is, in fact, the cured skin of the late actor Ricardo Montalban.
Well, the man who used to work at the post office?
Yes, sir. The man who used to work at the post office.
Shame that, he seemed like a nice bloke. Oh well, comfortable, ain't he?
Quite. Sir, are you quite sure you wish to keep that diseased mongrel? The hounds of Nick Hall are of the finest breeds and pedigrees. This little fellow appears to be... I think the correct term is seeping.
Willikins, I have explained this to you over and over again. I love Willikins. If you don't like Willikins, that is your problem, not mine. Ain't that right, Willikins?
Very good, sir. I shall put down a tarp on the back seat.
Ah, that's all right, Willikins. I already spread out your jacket back there for him. Willikins, where are we going?
We're off to the tiny village of Offpedshire on Glen, sir. Your family kept a small villa there, from which we can book passage on a ship to Europe, and from there to the rest of the colonies.
Now, why aren't we there now?
It is on the other side of the country, sir.
Willikins, we live in England. It doesn't take more than 3 minutes to get anywhere. Even I know that, and I am fantastically intelligent.
We are taking the scenic route.
Ah, well, very good, Willikins.
Thank you, sir.
Not you. Willikins just spit up on your jacket in their most artistic fashion. It was lovely.
Sir, I...
Ah, bloody hell, Willikins, what did you do?
It appears, sir, that the jewel-encrusted hood of your car has caved in, crushing its solid gold engine.
Oh, is that all? Well, we'll just have to get some more petrol. Perhaps that abandoned mist-covered castle has some.
Castle, sir?
That one over there, Willikins. Do you think I own it?
Whose castle have our heroes discovered? Is it Nick's? Is that even likely? And what of Willikins? The little dog, not... Damn it!
What? What is the problem?
Find out on next week's stirring episode of The Adventures of Nick and Willikins.
I don't understand why everyone has a problem with this.
Introduction.
Yes, hi, hello, here we are, it's us, we're here.
How you doing? How's it going?
How's it going?
Hi.
Yes, here we are.
We are here.
Yeah. We got a show happening today, apparently.
Yes.
Yet another old friend of mine, because...
We haven't gotten all of them yet.
Well, now we have.
This is it?
This is the last one. Well, I mean, I have other old friends, but as far as people with interesting things to say and sort of a performing bent, this is pretty much it.
We can loop back around to the beginning now.
We may. There's been a lot of talk recently about my friend Jason's version of Africa for some reason.
I hadn't
even thought of it in the better part of a year, and a bunch of references in the last week or so. So maybe get him back on and see what else he's got going on.
I bless the rain down in motherfucking Africa.
Half motherfucking Africa.
It's the fucking macaw.
Exactly. We've been throwing around the idea for today's show for a while, and it's kind of a broad topic. We were just going over ridiculous ideas for sitcoms, like ridiculous high concept shows with aliens or time travel or robots or just goofy shit that does not involve
people dealing with real issues.
Right. Swarming with magic robots.
One kid really liked the Speedo Man.
My knob tastes funny. We're just going to reenact that episode, actually. No, but this particular friend of mine has some knowledge of this subject. So I figure we've danced around the idea that I don't like sitcoms for a long time. I figure they deserve their fair shake. We should talk about that American art form, the sitcom. So
yep,
not a theme show though.
And I went back and I discovered that, you know what, you're right. That laugh track really can be really distracting now.
Putting aside the fact that the sound of other people's laughter cuts through me like a knife, it's just the pacing. It's a pacing issue. The fact that shows now are written without a laugh track means you get a lot more jokes.
Yeah.
You look at a show like The Simpsons, which obviously didn't need a laugh track. And unlike Hanna-Barbera that came before them, they realized, well, no, there would be no live studio laughing at a cartoon. Terrible. Well,
Hanna-Barbera just use it as yet another way of not having to write anything.
Well, yeah, even more padding.
And then we'll put in 15 minutes of laugh track, and that'll cover us a little bit more. Now we're down to only $8.
Scroll that background. Oh, speaking of Hanna-Barbera, one of our regular correspondents has written in to us in reference to that Yogi Bear thing that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Sure.
The great things come in bears. I believe, yes, it was Duh. And he did a Photoshop of you and I as Yogi and Boo Boo in that ad. And it says, let me pull it up here so I have the wording exactly right. Great things come in podcasters. Now, it's a cute joke. It's a nice reference to, you know, stuff that we joke about all the time. But unfortunately, Dave did this weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a bit late to the party there, Duh, but at least you're on the same wavelength as Dave.
So, you know, there's a feather in your hat.
Yeah. I think it's cap, isn't it? Isn't a cap in your hat?
Yes, it's a cap. There's a cap in your hat.
Very cool.
There's a cat in your hat.
Popping cats in your ass. That spun off into a weird direction.
Yeah.
No, where was I?
I have no goddamn idea.
It started with The Simpsons, where you had a comedy show that obviously didn't need a laugh track, and so the pacing suddenly got a lot faster and way more jokes. And then live-action shows started to realize this, and you got sort of in the late 90s, early 2000s, you had shows like Malcolm in the Middle and Scrubs, where they took out the laugh track and picked up the pace, and you can tell it's funnier. And now, I mean, a lot more shows – well, I don't know about a lot more shows, but a lot of the shows that I'm watching anyway – like 30 Rock and The Office, just don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
And it is sort of jarring to go back to those old shows. Like I love Seinfeld. Going back and watching old Seinfeld is a little painful because it's like there's 15 minutes of joke in a 22-minute show.
Well, and also there's 15 minutes of, you know, cheering for Kramer when he comes in.
Yeah, that's also true. And depending on the show you were watching in the 90s, there was a lot of that, you know, obnoxious hooting.
Yeah.
And so forth.
If you were watching the Arsenio Hall show, you were in a shit lot of trouble.
Yeah, but at least there, you know, there's an actual audience doing it, and it's not just dubbed in later.
By people who have been long dead.
Right.
Hooting from beyond the grave.
What was that? That was in Man on the Moon, wasn't it?
Yes.
Where Andy Kaufman was going on about dead people laughing.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Which I think is actually true.
As a kid, like one of the few things that's one of my totally useless talents, I guess you could call it abilities, is just picking up on sounds. Like I just have an ear for certain things, not music, not anything useful, just recognizing sounds. And I noticed that the same laugh track was used in a lot of different shows because I noticed like distinct laughs.
Mm-hmm.
There's this one guy that was in like Happy Days and a bunch of other shows. He's the hoo-hoo-hoo guy. That's his laugh. Like, after all the other laughs die down, he goes, hoo-hoo-hoo. It doesn't even sound like a laugh. It sounds like a monkey.
It's this guy. He doesn't really get the joke. He's at the back.
Yep. But that's how I first realized, wait a minute, either the same guys at all of these shows, or...
Actually, I'd buy that too, frankly.
Well, yeah, there's some
Happy Mr. Days Henderson, movie. Mr. Henderson, we want you back to watch this new episode of Happy Days. Well, if Happy Days needs me, they know I'll be there.
So, yeah.
Oh, God, it's like a mating call or something.
Ted McGinley's knocking at my door now. Show's about to get canceled. Damn it, we were doing so well. Oh, that was the other quick thing I wanted to mention to you guys. Fair warning. Next week, we will be discussing Star Trek.
Yep.
For an hour, or however long it is, 90 minutes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Probably several hours that I will cut down to 90 minutes. I went back and forth about this, and I sort of agonize about losing a lot of people when we talk about Star Trek. But it's something we both love, and it's something we both have a lot to say about.
Yep. And you know what? We haven't talked about it in a while, so...
That's what I went back and I looked, and the last one we did was something like episode 35, I think, which was the DS9 show. And
yep.
This will now be episode 79. So, I mean, you're talking 40-some episodes since we did it last. So, you know what? We'll do one or two a year. It's not that big a deal. So If you don't want to hear it, fair warning, don't listen. But it's going to be a great show, and you should.
Yes.
So there's that. But I'm telling you now.
You have been warned.
I'm tired of holding back. We want to talk about Star Trek. So there's that. Matt, anything else before we launch into the actual show?
I think we can get to it.
Very well. Stand by for the guest.
Panel discussion.
All right, our guest this week is another old dear friend of mine. Matt was just saying we haven't had enough people on the show that he's never met before. But
I was just saying that.
Actually, you have met her before, so.
That's true. We went to a airport one time.
We spent a day together driving to the airport.
We did?
We remember that. I understand if it wasn't terribly memorable for you.
Everything. Carry on.
Exactly. Well, you remember sitcoms, which is why you're here.
Yeah.
Jen, am I still introducing you as Siciliano?
Yes, you are.
Okay. Jen Siciliano, old dear friend of mine with awful taste, and that's why I love her.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
That was beautiful, Al.
Yeah. We started out conceiving the show about sort of high concept sitcoms, and Jen was like, well, what the hell does that mean? Is good? Because I don't know good sitcoms. And no, it's not that. It's... High concept is like one of those sort of inside showbiz deals. Cause I'm a big showbiz insider. yeah. No, I don't know where I read this, but, one of those things where you can explain the premise in like one sentence and it's usually something sort of fantastic or sci-fi or some small wonder is a high concept sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
Alf is a high concept.
Get this, Bill. We got a TV show about a family, but one of the kids is a robot. You sold me.
Yeah. That's high concept. If you can explain it to an idiot producer in one sentence, that's your show. So we came up with this list of quite a few just awful, awful old shows. And there's a few good ones in here.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on what your definition is. You define good show as something a little different than we do. I'm trying to be diplomatic here. You can bail me out here.
Take off the gloves.
Oh, very well. Well, let me. I mean, I don't want to try to paraphrase you here. What was the quote that you said in the in the pre-show there?
Well, it has to do with suspension of disbelief. Only the shows that you described or that concept, the high concept, it seems like a total inability to suspend disbelief.
Well, yeah, and then we started hashing this out, we realized, well, relatively normal grounded shows like Happy Days or Saved by the Bell also have some element of ridiculousness to it where someone will build a robot or sell their soul or something. And so we're just going to open this up to sitcoms in general. But since I sat through all these awful, awful shows, we're definitely going to have to pay particular attention to a few of these.
It's like now that you've watched them all, we're not going to dwell on them whatsoever. This was your penance.
Damn it. What did I do?
That'll be decided later.
Oh, very well. So, yeah. Jen, at one point, you were going to be writing a book about sitcoms. Is that right? Am I spoiling anything there? No.
That would... yeah, I did begin writing this book. And I started putting it together a couple of years ago, and then that computer died. And so the book exists on some disk somewhere. Yeah.
Because I mean, and you have like journalism cred. You've written. You've published. Like you know. Like you're not just some person who wanted to write a book. Like there's some legitimacy there. I'm just establishing your cred before we take off here is all.
Well, that's really sweet. No, I have no credibility when it comes to writing books.
Why you were chosen of the Legion of Al's friends that have been on the show before.
Yeah, no, I have, there are a lot of people who think that they can write books. I have no such illusions. I just wanted to put down all of the knowledge that keeps me up at night. Because the fact is, you know, you sent me a list of shows that you were considering to talk about today. And I sent back a list like 10 times longer.
Yeah, you did.
Of actual shows that I had watched. And I took some of the ones out. I mean, those are just sitcoms. I took out the ones that didn't quite qualify.
Right.
You know, the ones that were hour long shows or, you know, shows that didn't have laugh tracks. I mean, I weeded it out quite a bit. But the thing is, and the ones that I had only seen a couple of episodes of, I weeded those out too. Those are the 50 or 60 shows that I sent you are ones that I watched religiously. And keep in mind, this is before DVR.
Oh yeah. No, you're my age. We're the same age and we grew up in the same place. So, I mean, we had, you know, the three channels and like
four channels if the wind was going the right way.
Right. And 4 hours of reruns every night. And somehow you managed to pack in a curriculum of 60 some shows. So.
Oh, yes. And they wondered why my grades were bad.
I never wondered that. So yeah, before we took off, like why this subject? That's why. You
yes.
are like the most knowledgeable about this subject of anybody that I've ever met. So.
Why? Thank you. Thank you. It's so, mine. I owe it. I own it.
Very well. Yes, you should definitely own that. So that said, I think before we do anything else, we need to talk about Alf. I was only
the Alpha and Omega. That's where it all begins.
Oh, God. Another one. We have another one.
Ouch.
we have Dave on periodically, mutual acquaintance of ours, Dave Fields. And he does our voice stuff. And occasionally we just have him on like this. And he loves throwing that kind of thing out there. I really hoped. Okay, we just had him on a few weeks ago. We're pun free for a while. No, we're not.
Yeah, keep that no. proud tradition alive.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah,
so.
No, you came to the well. Oh. This would be it.
So, Alf. I'm not even sure. Did we talk about this on the show before? I can't remember. The horrible tragedy behind the scenes of Alf.
Oh, yeah. The dark underbelly of Alf. Not Alf's actual underbelly.
No. Alf himself apparently was quite happy.
Yeah, he would be.
Well, yeah. I mean, he got top.
He was better paid than anyone on that show.
Apparently, his contract rider was quite something to see. But the behind the scenes, we were reading about this. Apparently, like a 30-minute show took 20-25 hours to shoot. I'm taking this from Wikipedia, but they're direct quotes, so legitimacy here. The parents didn't get along with the kids didn't get along with the parents. The teen girl had bulimia. People threatened suicide. It was an awful, awful scene. And then on top of that,
just came in one day and Alf was hanging from the rafters. Alf, no!
And then on top of that, apparently a few years after the show went off the air, the dude who played Willie, the dad, the sort of nebbish middle-aged dad.
The quiet, quiet, unassuming Willie.
Yeah. Was Max Wright is the actor's name, was caught soliciting as a gay prostitute for money for crack cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a link to the story in the show notes because that sounds like something I made up and it just so completely isn't.
Oh, God.
You just wouldn't suspect him. He seemed like such a nice guy.
Well, yeah. It just like the entire episode was just revolved around Alf doing stuff and him going, oh, Alf,
right,
don't
exactly.
do that. Oh, don't. Oh,
when he had sometimes you couldn't even understand him because he had that sort of droopy voice. And he was
sort of a sad sack.
Yeah, exactly.
Right away, sir.
The weird thing is though, watching episodes, and apparently YouTube has all of them. just legitimately. So, you know,
if you like Alf, folks, you can get him.
Yeah. They have all of them, like, they're legitimately sponsored by the studio, so they're not going anywhere. They're as high quality as you could expect for, you know, Alf. But one of the things I noticed was half the time it's just normal sitcom shenanigans, and you cut to Alf on the couch or at a table making a wisecrack, and then you cut back to the action. You could probably just take Alf out of that show entirely.
It's like he's almost Mystery Science Theatering his own life.
Only not well.
Well,
yeah, exactly.
No. It's like if Mike and the Bots just went, ha, every now and then. And here comes this guy again. Ha!
Well, it's like you could drop in any other supernatural character from any other show.
So you could put, like, Mork in there, you mean? Like,
Sure, Mork or Harry from Harry and the Hendersons or Sabrina or, you know, whatever.
You know, I never watched that show, and it's not even on my list. That didn't occur to me that...
Sabrina?
Yeah.
Oh, Sabrina's fantastic.
It's an obvious choice. It didn't even occur to me.
I had such a huge crush on her in high school.
Of course you did. Well, we were just talking about Melissa Joan Hart, and Jen found some show that she's in now, apparently.
Melissa and Joey on ABC Family. It is not good. And I say that loving Melissa Joan Hart.
Well, who doesn't? I mean, she was America's sweetheart, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I assume. I have no idea what America thinks, so I couldn't say.
Well, I can tell you that I heard nothing... the debut of the show, but now it's on demand. So,
well, clearly, clearly somebody saw a need for that and they're filling it there.
Yes, exactly.
Or that's a promotional thing. I don't know. I guess Sabrina kind of opens a whole other door though, because there's a whole sort of subgenre of high concept sitcoms where you got the magic thing. You got you got I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched and Sabrina, and there must have been others, but those are the memorable.
Well, yeah, TGIF ran wild with it when Sabrina was doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Were they all related? Were they spinoffs?
There were a lot of crossovers. There was one with a genie.
Yep. That was You Wish. There was there was Teen Angel.
Mm-hmm. Right. Of course, the delightfully whimsical premise that some kid died and came back to life and is now mentoring some other kid. Is that the basic gist of that?
It's on a mission from God's cousin.
It's on a mission from Todd.
It was Rod, actually.
Nice. But a lot of these like goofy premises usually have some horrible dark thing going on beneath them. Mm. It's just not pleasant. And actually, Amanda had pointed out when I was watching Small Wonder. Research for the show, that she originally thought the reason the dad built the Vicky robot was because his real daughter died and he wanted to replace her.
Oh, God.
So, like, Astro Boy.
That might have given it a little more, you know, a little more gravity. But no, for some reason, he just wanted to build a robot in the shape of a little girl. There was no explanation given.
The thing I watched.
He was an engineer and she was just a prototype for God knows what. I don't think they needed to have actual reasons for prototypes.
Yeah, but they didn't. Like, he had to hide it from his boss. It was a secret. Yeah. It was a secret prototype, you know, he was working on his own that he didn't want anyone to know about.
Yeah, you know, the boss that he was building the thing for.
Right.
Yeah.
It just opens so many unpleasant questions.
It's great. I built this robot that looks like a small child to do manual labor around the house, but I'm not going to tell anyone about it.
Matt, didn't your mom react to?
Yeah, my mom back in the day, was really pissed off by my watching that joke. He's like, oh, well, a small child doing a small girl doing the work for everyone else. Fine. This was right before my parents divorced.
Wasn't it some kind of crazy feminist thing there? Like some kind of weird feminist subject?
Yeah, of course. They're
making the little girl do all the work.
They make the little girl doll a slave.
Wow.
And they only gave her one outfit.
Yeah, exactly.
And she lived in a crate in the boys' room, so.
Yes.
Very pleasant.
It was an elaborate scheme to keep women down.
Well, the thing I realized watching it was I forgot she lived in a crate in the boys' room.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Dignified.
And very dignified.
Just nothing about that show is at all good or wholesome or relevant or. It's just awful. And it went on for almost 100 episodes.
Yep. Oh, God. People were watching.
Yep.
And now I believe Tiffany Brissett is...
they did a Where Are They Now segment on her like a year ago.
Yeah, I believe she's now living in one of those states nobody ever goes to.
Right.
I believe she does... She's either a yoga instructor or some sort of... something like that.
I thought she was a dentist.
What was that?
I thought she was a dentist for some reason.
No, she has a degree in psychology.
Oh.
Well, I guess...
And there's left to say to that is just, huh, yeah, you're right.
No, I know, I remember reading... they had to dig her up. Like, they had to really work to find her because she dropped out of show business and had a normal life. And she didn't, like, she was unlisted and all that. But they did find her, yeah, living like a normal life in a boring place. And
yeah, I want to say she lives in Colorado, some little uncharted town in Colorado.
I'm praying that no one will ever find her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She spent years trying to stop talking like this.
Are you Vicky the Robot? Used to be.
But the thing, the thing we all noticed watching that show was that the little boy was far more robotic than Vicky ever was.
He was so wooden. He was terrible.
He looked like a My Buddy doll.
Or a Chucky doll.
Yes!
Yeah. True. And he had the voice to match, just the creepy, hi, Mom! Just, ugh.
Oh, wow, that was pretty spot on, actually.
Is it time for me to say my adorable one-liners yet?
That's the thing that really got me watching it, is, like, the pacing and the rhythm of the dialogue. It's clear there's supposed to be a joke there, but he'll just say some words, like word salad, and the laugh track sounds. And it's like, well, I guess that was a joke. But all he said was, let me move the coaster, or, you know, something like that, and maybe give a little thumbs up and a creepy smile and...
Crawl out of toner.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ones who definitely had the comic timing were the wacky neighbors.
Oh, yeah. The little girl, Harriet, actually grew up hot.
Mm-hmm.
And I found pictures.
I would not be surprised.
And, yeah. Edie McClurg is probably the same amount of hot that she ever was. But
yeah, it's sort of a zero-sum thing. She will always be the exact same hot that she is now. But she's consistent. By God, she's consistent.
This is true.
And she was, I would argue, one of the best parts of that show. Because she was consistently good. She had good comic timing.
Well, she's been in a lot of actually not bad things. She's been a constant presence. And it was one of those things I was worried when you and I were talking about this before the show. Matt wouldn't know who she was. And eventually, like, I went through three or four things she's been in. Eventually, you're going to find something because she's been in everything.
Yeah.
Of the list of, like, B comic actors, she's like the Kevin Bacon.
Mm-hmm. You pull up the picture, it's just like, oh, of course.
Oh, yeah, that lady, the Midwestern, you know. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right. If you were making
She has a very distinctive voice, and she's a tremendous character actor.
This is true. If you were making a TV, like, comedy version of Fargo, she might not be a bad choice.
Oh, yeah.
Except Fargo, now that I think of it. Didn't they make a Fargo? Now that I'm thinking about it, didn't they make that? I got
a Fargo series?
Yes, I think that they did. Yeah, that's starring Edie Falco in the lead, who went on to play. She went on to play Carmela Soprano.
And now she's Nurse somebody, right?
Yeah, Nurse. I want to say Nurse Betty, but that's a different thing entirely.
Nurse Jackie.
Nurse.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yep, this was a TV series that happened. So
wow.
There you go.
And clearly, it didn't scar her too badly.
Obviously not. She's turned out okay. Actually, she was also a brief one of many romantic leads in 30 Rock for Alec Baldwin.
Okay.
Oh.
So that was nice.
Good for him.
Yeah. going through the list that we made here, let's see what else. I watched Hi Honey, I'm Home, which actually wasn't as terrible as I thought it was going to be.
I remember having a great fondness for that as a kid and then sort of not.
It wasn't great. It's a fun premise where, like, 50 sitcom characters move in next door and it's the 90s. Mm. But I think the Brady Bunch movies did that way better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they got two good movies out of that and then they flailed.
Called it quits.
Yeah. No, they kept going. But
are there more Brady Bunch movies after the two?
Yeah.
Are there?
Yeah, there was a made-for-TV one that just most of the cast didn't come back. I think Gary Cole's the only one that came back. And
that doesn't count. Anytime they do a made-for-TV Brady thing, it's Brady Brides.
Yeah, but that's where they started.
Really?
That's where they belong.
Well, no, that's when Are you saying that the third movie was sort of a Brady Brides thing?
Very Brady Christmas?
It was something like that. Let me look it up.
Well, I know they did a bunch that weren't very good. There was there was one where there was the Brady Brides, which was a spinoff.
Yeah, they tried to make them serious a couple of times.
And they were terrible.
They tried. Mm-hmm. I know one where like Bobby grew up to be like a race car driver.
Yeah,
and,
that was Very Brady Christmas.
Yeah, and like he was horribly injured and everything was terribly serious.
Brady Mill had to close down or something.
No, the guy was shutting down the Brady Orphanage to or the teen center
to put up a Brady parking lot.
Here we go. The Brady Bunch in the White House. 2002. It's the second sequel to the Brady Bunch movie following a Very Brady sequel.
Huh.
Ow.
It was, let's see, it had Shelley Long and Gary Cole were both in it, but all the kids were different.
Mm. Oh, you know what? I think I did see that.
But it was made for TV, so, you know.
Wasn't so, like, Carol Brady was running for president or something?
Oh, God, really?
She was the political... The political character, yeah, I think.
It says Mike Brady is appointed as president. Carol Brady, in addition to be first lady, becomes the first female vice president.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's not a conflict of interest.
No. Very Plus, nice. It, you know, you always know where your vice president is. Theory. Mm-hmm.
This is true.
While the undisclosed Brady.
Wikipedia goes on to say, while the political party affiliation of the fictional first family is never mentioned, several bits of dialogue in the film seem to suggest that the Bradys are Republicans and that Mike Brady supports several of the domestic policies of President George W. Bush.
Of course.
Make your own joke here.
You know, I could have pegged them for Republicans.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're definitely wholesome. I mean, the whole family values thing, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. The kids are probably groovy Democrats.
And you didn't want the show to get political.
No, I would go so far as to say the kids are not Democrats.
Really? See, I picture like a reverse family ties dynamic happening there.
Oh, no. I believe they are all very conservative. I mean, they like a groovy time, don't get me wrong. But
I've heard the song, yes.
In a Very Brady sequel, the kids and Mr. Brady go to Hawaii to rescue Carol.
Oh, right.
From her first husband, who wasn't really her husband.
Right.
Not to give anything
Spoiler
away.
Spoiler alert.
But they go to rent a car, and the guy behind the counter said, yeah, I don't want to alarm you guys, but I think your wife, sir, I think she's gay. And he says, well, of course she's gay. We all want to be gay.
Well, no. See, that's just a crazy, you know, out of time, fish out of water thing. That's not they're not against the gay. They're just, I don't know what it means.
Gay would occur to them is what I'm saying. I think it would be, definitely against their entire way of life.
It's highly possible.
It's speculative.
Did you just smack me down with Brady Cannon? Well, continuity says.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice.
Sorry about that.
No, don't be.
The original Brady text, you'll find that.
Stand your ground, the Book of Sherwood Schwartz. Good for you. but this Hi, Honey, I'm Home was all right. Like I said, it was the same vibe as the Brady Bunch movies, you know, the 50s sitcom and the modern setting. There were a couple of funny lines in it, I actually thought, like from the one episode I watched. What really surprised me was seeing the standard sitcom pretty teenage daughter was Julie Benz, who went on to play Darla and Angel and some other things.
So, you know, if you want to see her in a poodle skirt.
Yeah. Well, very, very nice looking. So there's that. That look works for everybody, really.
But, it doesn't work for you.
No.
Well, you haven't seen me lately.
Fair enough.
All right. So going sort of, not exactly alphabetically, but sort of train of thought-wise in the list here, we went from Hi, Honey, I'm Home to Heil, Honey, I'm Home.
Which I thought you were kidding about when you mentioned.
Yeah.
And, a lot of people think that when they first hear it.
And we joked among ourselves in a bit of an off-color way that we will not repeat on the show. But, yeah, it does exist, and it's what you think it is. It's Hitler and Eva Braun as a sitcom family. They hate their Jew neighbor. And in the only episode that aired, Neville Chamberlain was coming over for dinner.
What a shock. Only one episode. I wonder why that happened.
And it never actually aired. I think if the text before this was accurate, the BBC aired it after it was pulled off American TV, just as like a curiosity.
Oh, God.
So it's I will definitely provide a link to this in the show notes because it's something people.
No one will believe you.
Yeah, it's something people need to be aware of. and it kind of reminded me of That's My Bush, the short-lived Matt Stone Trey Parker show.
Mm.
Where just because the taking ridiculous sort of cookie cutter standard sitcom settings and putting them in really serious situations is just really funny.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like played with just being like a sitcom, right? Like,
yeah, but it was ironic. Like it knew it was trying to be a bad sitcom, and that made it kind of funny in a creepy way.
Mm.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's in bad taste, and of course it shouldn't exist and all that. But I may have laughed once or twice.
But then I felt really bad about it.
Yeah, I did. So moving on. Of course, we got Aliens in the Family, which, again, what it sounds like. More creepy than funny, but the puppets are pretty good.
Sort of like the Brady Bunch if the family, one of the families was from space.
Right, exactly. It was like a mixed family. It was like half of them are human, half of them are aliens.
Can they get along? No. Hmm.
What's that, Jen?
I'm just wondering how that would work. Like, can they get along? No, when one tries to eat the other.
Or maybe they just eat the cats. I mean, you know, it depends.
Yeah.
Or what was it? Sour
I
milk.
I think that's the last advice. It only worked on a couple of shows.
It was sour milk on Alien Nation. I mean, it could be any household object. It doesn't have to be people.
That's true.
And I'm sure there must have been a sitcom about cannibals at some point.
Oh, God, I hope so.
Well, I mean, there were cannibals running around in Gilligan's Island, weren't there?
Oh, yeah, every other episode.
Sometimes there were. There were often...
The Headhunters, Island of...
What's that?
Yeah, Headhunters. Mm. There are lots of primates, lots of headhunters. Every now and then, random guest stars would pop up.
Yeah, I know the Harlem Globetrotters. Well,
the place was plagued by Globetrotters.
Yeah. It was lousy with them.
And bludgeon corpses. No, I mean,
it happens. You set traps and they keep coming back.
You talk about your high concept sitcoms. That's really sort of the crown jewel there is Gilligan's Island. Mm-hmm. I mean, total suspension of disbelief, total just absurd concept, one sentence premise, but kind of charming in a stupid way.
Kind of stupid in a stupid way too, though.
Yeah.
It really, that was very difficult to suspend disbelief because, I mean, everyone had, you know, there's a certain, there are certain points during sitcoms when you know something, you know, it's the whole irony thing. You know something that the characters don't know and you're screaming at the TV.
Sure.
Oh, I mean, my God, do X, Y, Z, and you can get off the island or whatever. Mm. And everything just seems so painfully obvious, but their fatal flaw, each and every castaway had a fatal flaw that just made it so impossible for them to function on a daily basis.
Yeah, but I think you're watching it through the eyes of you know, our generation, which was the first truly, like, you know, ironic. Like, we look at everything like that. I think going back 20 years and our parents watching that might not have thought of it that way. There was just not the, you know, not the level of self-awareness and irony yet.
I certainly hope there was. I'd like to think there was.
Well, I'd like to think my parents are smarter than that, but I, you know, maybe not. It's hard to say.
Well, and the same with the Brady Bunch. I mean, you know, why wouldn't Greg and Marcia find each other hot? But they're brother and sister. No, they're technically not.
It's still gross.
Well, it's really gross. Almost as gross as Mrs. Brady and Greg, but...
Which actually happened in real life, didn't it?
Which actually happened in real life.
Well, good for you, Greg. There's a Wesson cooking oil joke in there somewhere, but I'm going to leave that alone. Yeah. All right. Then you get into Happy Days, which is not high concept, but it has those weird moments where aliens show up or where somebody sells their soul. Or, I mean, that's where Mork came from.
Or someone jumps a shark.
Well,
that didn't happen.
But, I mean, the original concept of that show was supposed to be like American Graffiti. It was supposed to be like, hey, remember the 50s? Remember the innocent 50s? We're trying to get chicks and rock and roll's happening. And, you know, it was... how do you get there from there to jumping sharks and aliens? Like, just
yeah,
it's when the show starts going downhill. Yeah, it's when.
Well, I mean, obviously, that's where Jump the Shark comes from. But I'm wondering what the motivation behind the writing is. Like, where do you come up with? I'm going to turn my sweet little sitcom into this.
Into a steaming pile of crap. Well, I think there comes a point where the show is so good that they start thinking, what can we do now? And instead of coming up with actual stuff that might be viable that people might want to watch, they start coming up with, you know, they start throwing pretty much everything they can into the pot, even though some of it's tuna fish and some of it's ice cream and, you know, and.
Well, now, see, that thought process applies to a good show, but then you talk about Happy Days. This was, like, the number one show in America for, what, 10 years?
Yeah.
It was awful.
It was dreadful.
It was never a good... Matt, have you ever seen Happy Days?
Yeah, I watched a lot of it, and it's just, oh, God.
And
it's dreadful, and
like, even, it's just boring.
Yeah, nothing really happens in any episode, and just so slow and... irritating. Yeah. But then all these spin-offs that came off from it. It's bizarre.
Which were even more insufferable than the others.
There's what did they do? Like five or six different separate spin-offs?
Well, there's Mork and Mindy, there's Laverne and Shirley, there's Joni Loves Chachi.
There was another one.
Well, there's this one called Out of the Blue, which has a weird sort of supernatural.
No one has heard of.
Well, yeah, but and apparently there's wild fanboy debate on the internet over whether this counts as a Happy Day spinoff, and I don't want to get into that, so I don't want to step on those people's toes.
The diehard Happy Days fans.
Look, you know how you and I get about Star Trek? Just imagine how some people get about Happy Days. Let's just... you think Kirk versus Picard is bad. Fonzie versus Chachi is just... But then shows go in the completely opposite direction. Now, I'm still talking about these Happy Days shows, where instead of fantastic elements, instead of swarming with magic robots, you get real-world problems. And then we come to the episode of Mork and Mindy that I watched, where Mork fights the KKK.
Oh, God.
Because
such a good idea.
For some reason in the 70s and early 80s, we could not separate between wacky sitcom and serious melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
You know what this show needs? I mean, we've got aliens. We've got, you know, an unmarried couple living together. What this show needs is a good dose of racism.
We need to show them how Mork would really think about our human sentiment of racism.
Mork, what do you think of racism?
Chazelle? Yeah. Rainbow suspenders?
Yeah.
I got nothing. But yeah, it's the same. And Jen, we talked about this briefly in the pre-show as well. I know you're a MASH fan, and I'm not going to put the show down, but it definitely weaved a weird line between drama and comedy. And at a moment's notice, you'd be laughing, and then it would be serious, and then you'd be laughing again. It was just...
Yeah, especially toward the later shows. They got more serious, and ultimately the finale was, I think, dreadful. I grew up watching it. I grew up watching MASH, and I didn't see the finale until about 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was horrible.
Now, what happened? Because I've never seen it.
It's a very long show. It seems to get longer every time you watch it. And it's pretty much, I think they took out the laugh track entirely, and it's all about the horrors of war and... Pierce is going insane or might be insane or something like that. And he ends up on this bus with a bunch of refugees. Mm-hmm. And the entire show is them trying to decode exactly what happened to Pierce on this bus. And basically what the gist is, they're being hunted by snipers when they're on this bus, and everybody's trying to be really quiet. And Pierce is telling this woman to shut her baby up because the baby the woman was holding a chicken in Pierce's memory. And ultimately the woman kills the chicken because it wouldn't shut up. And it turns out in real life, or, you know, in not the flashback, it was really a baby and not the chicken.
Oh, so. God.
Wow.
Yeah, and of course Pierce breaks down and he's in, you know, in hysterics and remembering all of this, and it's just not a half hour sitcom at that point.
I remember that show ended in, it was like 83. My parents ran a bar at that point, and they had a big party at the bar where people would come dressed as MASH characters and watch the big finale, and you know, it was like a sporting event, only they gathered around this sitcom, this long-running popular sitcom. I just can't – knowing that about that finale, I can't imagine that party went incredibly well.
God, there would be a lot more drinking than I would.
Yeah, my parents must have cleaned up that night, so good for that.
Thanks, man.
No wonder Christmas of 83 was so great for me.
That show actually – that was when I learned the word preempted. I had come home. This was back when we had half day kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And I came home, I don't know, 11 o'clock or whatever. And my mother was upstairs cleaning the bathroom. I remember this vividly. And I came upstairs and I said, "Mommy, MASH got preempted." And she said, "What? What do you know from preempted?" I said, "MASH got preempted. It was on WTCG," mm-hmm. the pre-Fox affiliate at that point. Mm-hmm. And I said, "President Reagan got shot. MASH got preempted." And my mom was like, the plunger, going, "Okay, you need to focus. What just happened?" So I repeated, "MASH got preempted." So yeah, that was, I remember watching it very, very avidly when I was really little.
Anything you need to know about Jen is summed up in that little anecdote right there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Never mind the president being shot, MASH isn't on.
Not just not on, preempted.
Preempted, of course. You've learned a new word.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ. Talking about finales, this actually goes neatly into something we wanted to talk about. We had a smaller list of the sort of the high concept shows that were actually good.
Yeah,
We had the live action Tick, which I swear by, 6 episodes, but I thought it was fantastic.
It was very good.
Yeah. Yep.
Third Rock.
Yeah, Third Rock. Soap, which none of us saw, but I think we all know enough that it was probably good.
Mm-hmm.
The Addams Family.
Yep.
Get Smart.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come around.
The Addams Family movies, which were fucking awesome.
What's that?
The Addams Family movies, which...
Well, true.
They were brilliant.
But, right, but
besides
as far as...
their terrible theme song.
Womp Addams Family, there it is. I beg to differ, sir. But then that brings us around to the last one on the list, which was Dinosaurs.
Oh, yes.
Which, not a bad show. I mean, the Henson guys made some good puppets, and, you know, no laugh track.
It's a gorgeous-looking show.
Yeah. And
it was beautiful to watch, and I never actually saw the show... more than a handful of times. I did look it up, though, just to see, you know, how it ended.
Well, hang on. And that's what we're going to talk about now. Matt made...
That's your lead-in right there. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, did you actually see the clip? There's YouTube. They just have it isolated to the last 3 minutes, like the final scene. So you don't have to watch the whole episode if you just want to see how it ended. Oh, wow. And yeah. Matt, apparently you saw this when you were little.
I was a big dinosaur fan for, I think, the entire 4 or 5 years it was on. And it's just like, oh, man, this is a great show. You know, happy dinosaurs. And, you know, they're so like ourselves, but they're different and learning and stuff. And then the last episode ends with the extinction of the species.
So the world's ending. They're all sitting around in the living room talking about how the world's going to. And the baby, like, especially poignantly, the baby's like, so what's going to happen? We're going away. Are we moving? No, the world's ending.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to be honest, when you write a show like that, you kind of know how it's going
to
end.
Yeah, that's what I was saying to Matt. It's kind of that old Titanic joke. Like, you know what.
But I mean, like, the fact that they had the balls to actually do it, you know, that's, like, really impressive to me.
This is true.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, it was a whole thing about how, you know, you probably shouldn't pollute the environment and stuff because, you know, end of the world. But, like, they actually did it not heavy-handed and shitty, which, you know, is nice.
Yeah. And really looking at whenever shows try to do that sort of broad, like, mindfuck ending, it usually doesn't work. I mean, you got that weird ending to Roseanne.
Oh.
That went off the rails so spectacularly, I couldn't even
tell you.
I know there was a lottery winning.
Yeah, they won the lottery, and her sister married, like, an Eastern European prince.
Yeah, but then the final revelation was that none of that happened. that somebody died of cancer and someone else was in a horrible accident, and she was writing this as a story to distract herself from the fact that, you know, like, no, we won the lottery. Everything's going to be okay. No, it's not.
It was the dream of autistic Roseanne.
Oh, hang on. We'll get to that. I want to talk about the lesser endings before we get to that thing. But you got Roseanne. You got, like, the Newhart thing where he wakes up in bed with his previous sitcom wife. That was pretty good. But for the most part, I mean, I can't think of a whole lot of times where a big finale's gone in that direction and it actually works. Usually it's just kind of like, what was that?
And yeah. I mean, most sitcoms, they don't do the ending. They just sort of do that, well, and then it stopped.
Well, I mean, you can do like Cheers did a thing where, you know, Diane came back one last time and Sam was torn. Like, does he go with her? Does he, you know, what does he do? And, you know, it was a nice, like, one final, let's go back through and see what was good about the show. Mm-hmm. But then you get into something like Seinfeld, which, Jen, I know you're not a fan, but bear with us for a minute.
It had a lot of good qualities to it. I thought it was terrible.
But the finale, they just decided to basically, it was basically a clip show. It was basically like, let's relive all our old jokes without really doing that much new. Mm-hmm. And then everyone ends up in jail for some reason. It was lame.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, like I say, I can't think of whenever a show kind of goes out on a limb with that crazy twist ending.
Doesn't usually work.
And I'm talking sitcoms. I'm not talking actual dramatic shows. I'm talking straight light comedies that try to suddenly take a serious turn. It just doesn't work for me.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the whole Three's Company.
Well, how did that end?
The whole premise was, you know, Jack is gay but not gay and living with these two girls and... Mm. It all ends with Jack falling in love with an actual girl and going in and living with her,
that was just the thinly disguised premise to launch the the short-lived spinoff, though, really.
Three's a Crowd, mm-hmm. which was dreadful. Mm-hmm.
Of course it was.
But and if I may, I do love the Three's Company.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do.
This is how you and I initially bonded, by the way. I'm not pretending to be above her in any way. We spent an entire car ride to New York City talking about Three's Company.
Yes. And it is gloriously bad. I mean, there were a lot of really wonderful things about the show, but ultimately it was
just
terrible.
Awful. Yeah.
It was just awful. And I've watched like every single episode, and I even have there's a book.
Yep.
Come and knock on our door.
I have it too.
But the whole premise of the show is that Jack is pretending to be gay so that he can stay in this apartment with these two girls, two single women, and he's always, you know, acting like he's, you know, very wanton and very lascivious, and can he get into the girl's bedroom, and it's always a big, you know, there's always a rolled up newspaper to whack him over the head with. When he moves in with her name is Vicky, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He moves in with her the last episode, and it's a totally big deal because he's actually given permission to sleep in the same room, nay, the same bed with a girl.
Well, he got married to her, so one would
No. At the time, he didn't.
Ah, okay, then.
He was just living with her.
Ah.
Yes. So that was a big deal because she, you know, she crawled on into bed. I got the impression she'd been around the block a few times. And, you know, Jack is totally bundled up in his pajamas and his robe. And he's like, you know, pretty nervous, which is the exact opposite of the way.
He and Larry were just sleazy ladies men through the entire series.
Yeah. But as it turns out, Jack was not the hornball that we had been led to believe.
So you're saying there might be some extra layer, third metatextual layer, where he actually was gay after all? Some,
you know,
beautiful irony where he's pretending to be gay, but he's really a ladies man, but that's just to hide the fact that he's actually gay?
See, that's how I would have ended the show.
he and Larry kiss.
That
would have blown 1983's mind.
Have great, nice, tasteful reception at the Regal Beagle.
He would have run off with Steve Dallas.
No, it's Larry Dallas.
Wait, really? Was it?
Yes, Larry Dallas. Yeah,
Richard Klein.
No, I was referencing the end of Bloom County.
Yeah, I know you were. There was no penguin in Three's Company, as far as I know. Maybe
you saw it.
Maybe Burgess Meredith made an appearance. I don't know.
Quack, quack. Chrissy, I'm your long-lost uncle.
Yeah. And incidentally, it just, I know we're not going to focus on Three's Company. Incidentally, Chrissy's real name, what was it?
Christmas Snow.
Christmas Snow.
Yeah.
Oh, God, really?
This is a shameful part of my brain that's never been exposed in the show before. But yes, I know way too much about Three's Company.
And her father was the Reverend Snow.
Yes. Lovely. All right. So, are there any other, before I want to wrap up the whole finale thing before we march into this last bit of weirdness here. Any other finales that really stand out? Any usually it's like a wedding or like a, you know, something like that. But like I say, it's these weird mindfuck twist endings that always just like don't really work for me, where it was all a dream.
Nothing I can think of, especially not in the last, you know.
Well, we've been talking about sort of TV land, you know, like everything from about the 70s to through about the 90s. So, I mean.
Okay. I do have at my disposal here the Nick at Night classic TV companion.
Of course you do. That's the book you wish you wrote, probably.
Oh, absolutely.
But did you guys ever see the Weird Science TV show?
I was aware that it existed, but I never did actually see it.
I loved the last episode of that. It was like, we got canceled, we're going crazy. And I mean, that's like, it's based on the movie, right? So you got like two guys and the genie they made with her computer.
Sure.
So already kind of bizarre concept. But then the last episode, it's like aliens invade. And it turns out that the other guy's brother is related to the principal. And there are crazy robots.
See, now that I like when you know the end's coming and you just completely throw out all the stops and say, fuck it.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, we're done. Fuck it.
That's nice. But then we get, and I know this isn't a sitcom, but this takes us somewhere really bizarre. Mm. St. Elsewhere, which was a serious drama. It was a medical drama, right? Like a,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like ER or whatever of its time, which ends, it's all the dream of an autistic kid.
Yeah.
Noted, TV and comic book writer Dwayne McDuffie wrote this fantastic essay that we've linked in our show notes here, that basically says, well, St. Elsewhere crossed over with this handful of shows. Those shows crossed over with this handful of shows, and so on, sort of in concentric circles going out. If all of those shows are related in continuity, then 90% of television that's ever been written is in the mind of this autistic child.
Yeah.
I love it.
That was kind of my reaction when Al showed me yesterday.
I showed it to Matt about 24 hours ago, and since then, he just, every now and then, he'll send me an IM or a direct message or whatever, like, oh my god, I just realized this, or like, he's turned into like Fox Mulder with like the board, with the chart, and everything pointing to everything else.
The ends of shoelaces are called aglets.
It's fucking amazing, and I realize now we don't really have much to say about it. It's just
insane.
Yeah, the fact that this guy put all this work into this and hit on this bizarre thing, and his overall point was, it's just a show, you should really just relax. But it's,
which is fine when you find, until you find out the Mystery Science Theater crosses over to St. Elsewhere, too.
Wait, it never existed? God damn it.
That makes it even more meta.
I suppose that's true. But yeah, it's, I guess we really don't have a lot to say about it. It's something to different.
I just sort of like that shared universe concept. It's one of the reasons I liked League of Extraordinary Gentlemen so much.
Sure.
Just the fact that all this stuff just sort of clicks together.
Well, and that's the whole comics thing too, is all these characters exist in the same world, like Batman and Superman and all that stuff is all the same. But yeah, to think about that in TV terms, it definitely throws things into a weird area. And and some of the connections he makes are a little out there, but they're still.
Yeah, well, like, there's a lot of them that use those, like, Morley cigarettes, which I don't think really counts.
Well, a lot of people like using the same references. Like, they'll mention, what is it, Yo-Yo Dine from Buckaroo Banzai. Mm. Just, you know, everyone likes that reference, but since that fake company exists in two shows, they must be the same.
Well, and there were a bunch of ones that used the Weyland-Yutani Corporation, which is the company from Alien.
Ah, nice. Well, yeah. I lost love doing stuff like that, too, where they would just, if there's a box in the background and it has to be something, they'll put some joke on it, which then links it somehow to this.
Right. And then those in-jokes started appearing in new Star Trek.
Right. So ponder that, won't you? Oh, So now we have some mail. I realized I was about to wrap up the show, but Jen, you get to dive into our mailbag here with us.
That's, lucky old you.
Yeah, you don't know what this means. let's see what we have here. All right, first question is about comics. So I don't know how to answer this either, Jen. So usually we just shut up and let Matt answer these.
Oh, okay.
This is from Ted Bigsby, and he writes, first, I am drunk, so forgive misspellings and grammar.
No.
Excellent. Every good write-in starts with that, I would hope.
quite a lot of them don't tell us that they're drunk, but it's pretty clear they're either drunk or stupid. So we have this guy named Flonk. He's both. he says, how are you? I am drunk. Matt, you got me hooked into comics with Scott Pilgrim. Now I want to read more. I'm a huge fan of Gambit. What's a good comic to start for that? I assume you know the best of people I know. I guess that's a sentence. Al, if you know, please inform me. Thanks, Drunken Theodore Rasputin Bigsby.
Huh.
Matt, you want to field that? I get nothing. Jen, dear, I mean, unless dear Jen, you Ted,
got... Dear Ted Theodore Bigsby.
That's a good
There are no good Gambit comics ever.
Yeah, are you really a Gambit fan if you're a boy? I mean, allegedly straight boy. I mean, this is the character, Jen. I don't know if you ever watched the X-Men comics in the 90s or the cartoons in the 90s, but
not so much. I saw the movies. That's it.
He's the one with the bad, like, horrible Cajun accent, which we've mentioned on this show several times before. Just spicy crawdad, that kind of thing.
And
that was his entire character, Spicy Crawdad. He's like Justin Wilson, only hot.
Oh, okay. Well, good for him.
So, Matt, you got nothing? You got no recommendations?
No, there are no good Gambit comics at all.
You're going to you're going to arouse the ire of many people there.
If she can find one, feel free to write us in. But I'm standing by this. No good Gambit comics.
Very well. Next question comes from Deke Winsome, and he writes, dear podcastering sarcasteteers, people are getting elaborate with these links. How are you? I'm not well, but there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Anyway, I appreciate you answering my question about Frank Miller and his assorted problems. Also, you were right about the Mongols. Here's my question for your keen minds to ponder this week.
Do I even want to know what the Mongols had to, you were right about them?
Matt, do you remember? I have no idea.
I don't even remember what the Mongols was in reference to.
No, me neither. We've recorded something like 80 of these now, and in the course of a year, I don't remember. People think
it seems like it would be a wonderful thing to put on, you know, a throwaway line just in a random TV show. You were right about the Mongols.
Cue laugh track.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing about the Huns. Go on.
The other day I was at the barber shop, which I tend to frequent when I need a haircut. Or heroin. Anyway, I noticed that he cut my hair, he just swept it up and tossed it in the garbage. It got me to thinking, is there a use for hair after it's been cut? What recycled uses can you come up with for it? I'd rather see this potentially valuable resource used than filling up our landfills. So how about it?
Oh, I know.
Well, you're the guest. Go ahead.
Apparently you can use it. My hair salon was collecting all of their hair clippings and sending them down to the Gulf, because apparently wads of shorn hair have remarkable absorbent qualities.
I suppose that makes sense. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they're mopping up oil.
I'm now picturing the Gulf of Mexico being just giant, like, bath drain clogged with oil and hair.
That's kind of gross, but apparently it works.
I'm just picturing waterfowl being attacked by a giant wig.
Yeah.
Nice. I don't know. I mean, there's only so many like voodoo dolls you can make. Otherwise,
witchcraft is my big go-to.
Yeah, but you really only need one hair or two. You don't need an entire haircut's worth.
Well, if you want to do, you know, really big witchcraft.
Or like a stylish one. Like you really want to give it some hair. Like a My Little Pony voodoo doll.
And while you're at it, get some get fingernails and teeth. Those are good too.
Yeah,
nice.
Always nice.
I did have an ex-boyfriend who saved all of his dryer lint because he wanted to make a pillow.
Nice.
Gross.
Well, I remember there was a guy that you were friends with. This is, I'm pretty sure, a story you told me, where he shaved off all his body hair and said something like there was enough hair there to make a dog.
Oh, Trent. Yeah. He didn't shave off all of his body hair. He was going as, I can't remember what it was, but it was for Halloween. He shaved his legs.
Oh,
he's
okay.
Terrible.
Bit of a hirsute fellow.
Hirsute fellow, yeah.
Gotcha. All right, next question comes from Blandy. Oh, it's this LinkedIn thing again. Here, Blandy is a friend of ours who, for some reason, started, without his knowledge, sending us invitations to join LinkedIn. Which was pretty funny for a few weeks, but now that he knows it's happening, he's sending it on purpose, and it's not funny anymore.
Yeah.
He's completely killed the joke, so...
Give up, Blandy.
Way to go, Blandy.
Way to go, Blandy.
Next question appears to be spam. It says, your wife photos.
Oh, heaven.
Well, I can't imagine opening this zip file will place my computer in any danger whatsoever. So
no, I'm imagining it. I can't imagine.
Let's see. Next question comes from John Wiggins, and he writes, hello, Dr. Mr. and Mrs. Algar, Matt, get, boy, this is long. Time for a semi-serious question.
All right. Mm-hmm.
We love that. Are we going to be fighting the KKK?
Hope.
No more than usual.
Given that a superhero in any comic is, for the most part, not your average human being, many have powers that are, in fact, not human, but from other worlds' dimensions. Others were once human, but have been given powers for gamma radiation or other means. Batman stands apart because he's just a normal human. Would this make most people believe that a superhero can be an occupation choice? And if so, has Matt ever purchased a cave for potential, for future potential options? I'm not really sure what he's getting at here.
I personally don't own a cave.
Well, I think that's the question. I don't know what the rest of that was about. But, Jen, did you follow that at all?
I did, actually. There was an episode of This American Life a couple of weeks ago on NPR.
That made me feel guilty that I wasn't donating money to something?
Well, absolutely.
Sorry.
They mentioned you by name.
I figured.
But specifically, we're talking about... I think it all began with, you know, if you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Oh, that's that one with John Hodgman where they're talking about flight versus invisibility, right?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. They ran it. I remembered it from once before. But they were talking about how, you know, if people have the choice to become superheroes, really, what would the incentive be to put yourself in danger every day? Because, you know, Batman was not impervious to pain. I mean, he had, you know, a schmancy suit and everything, but... But when it comes right down to it, he had no actual powers. He had gadgets.
Except he is Batman. That is sort of a power in and of itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm Batman.
Yeah, exactly.
But he still could have been killed.
True.
I mean, just, you know, the ability to say, I'm Batman, doesn't make you, you know.
Well, this is true.
And the whole point of the show on This American Life was that, you know, people probably wouldn't just become superheroes out of the kindness of their heart because, you know, if the shit goes down, you're still mortal.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's a premise that a lot of comic book writers, in the brief time that I was writing my own comic, actually, that was the basic premise too, was with great power comes a great responsibility. Nuh-uh. You know, whatever, I do what I want.
It comes with great responsibility only if you are easily subjected to, you know.
Yeah, Catholic guilt. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And
that being said, I would totally love to have a cave.
See, I'm not a big cave person. I don't know. I like it. I like things dark and dank, but.
I look really good in a cape. I'll be honest.
Well, you don't have to wear a cape to live in a cave, though.
No, you can just have a cape.
Yeah, and you can just have a cave.
I do have a cape. I don't have a cave yet.
I feel like we're doing some kind of electric company thing where we're changing cape to cave.
Cave.
All right. Final question.
And Morgan Freeman showed up dressed as Dracula.
Just as Easy Reader. Spider-Man showed up and went, wah!
A rubber glove sandwich.
All right. Final question comes from Mike X, and he writes, Dear Al, Matt, and possible guest, Alan Moore? No, it's not.
Yay!
He does own a cave.
I'm pretty sure he does, yes. Jen, you're not Alan Moore, are you?
Not that I checked. I mean, not last time I checked.
Okay.
Are you really angry about comic book or about movies based on your comics?
I am, actually.
Oh, well, there we go.
Oh, well, nice to have you on. Is there a movie you guys hate? I was irritatingly reminded of Starship Troopers recently, and that movie still makes me angry. There's something offensive about giant insects that aren't even intelligent enough to obey the square cube law, being able to lob huge rocks at the Earth from the other side of the galaxy and hit in a relatively short period of time. Plus, the movie's just completely and gratuitously sucks, even though everyone seems to love it. Anyway, is there a movie you guys would like to punch in the face if it were a person? Later, Mike.
Absolutely.
Jen, you want to take this one first?
So, it's 1996.
Oh, God, is it really?
the blizzard of 96 hit on January 6th, 1996. My 21st birthday was January 7th, 1996. I was stuck in the house for like a freaking week with my parents, God love them, and my grandmother, you know, God rest her soul. However, no alcohol.
Oh, God.
And approximately 10 miles from D.C. So I dug out and I ended up at a friend's house who lived in D.C. and got stuck watching. Now, and we were stranded at that point because it snowed more. You know, no place to go.
No, it was one of those. I mean, I remember this. We were from the same area and I was living there at the time. It was one of those, you know, it snowed and then it freezing rained and then it snowed again. And then it was just it went on and on and on forever. And it was rough.
Yeah. And we had three movies. I guess someone had gone to Errol's or whatever. And we had three movies. We had Fear of a Black Hat, which I think I fell asleep through. I'm told it's not bad. Followed by Waterworld.
Oh.
Followed by The Dark Backward.
I don't know that one.
It's horrible.
I bet.
It's Judd Nelson.
Well, right there.
Yeah. And he plays a really terrible comic in New York. And he's a stand-up comic. And the whole thing, I mean, I only remember snippets of it, but it was so icky. I mean, it just made me feel dirty. The whole film made me feel dirty. His shtick, no matter what his stupid stand-up routine was, he ended every routine with, and it just goes to show nobody can get a cab in New York City. Well, you know, he sucked as a comic. Mm-hmm. Then he starts noticing, yes, I'm getting to that. I've got Statler and Waldorf here telling me that he starts growing something out of his back, and he goes to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, seems like you've got a third arm growing out of the back of your back of your front here. And so he starts ending all of his stand-up routines with the same line about not being able to eat a cab in New York City. And then he turns around and takes off his shirt so that everybody sees this stupid third hand. And that brings him great fame and icky. The movie is icky.
Well, looking at its Wikipedia entry, starring Judd Nelson, Bill Paxton, Wayne Newton, Laura Flynn Boyle, and James Caan. So there's an all-star lineup for you.
It's all shot in sepia tone, I'm pretty sure.
Lovely.
I mean, it's like vomit-colored.
Well, and definitely the situation also dictates your experience there because, you know, it was your 21st birthday and you expected to go out and celebrate the fact that you could drink for the first time. And
trapped in a house full of smelly punks watching Waterworld and The Dark Backward.
I like that Waterworld was your second movie in that sequence. Like, it wasn't as bad as what you actually had to watch.
Yeah, well, but I couldn't leave.
No, you couldn't.
Yeah.
Lovely. Matt, how about you? I know...
My hatred of Avatar is well documented.
Yeah, so I think in fairness, you should go with something else.
I also hate Requiem for a Dream, the most depressing movie of all time.
All right, then. So, you know, these aren't necessarily bad movies. We're talking about just movies that we particularly...
No, it's a good movie, but I hate it.
Very well.
We watched it at like 5 in the morning after an all-night sugar jag, me and Amanda and our various other friends. And it ended as dawn broke and we staggered out into the day. The birds were tweeting and we just all wanted to die.
Yeah, that would do it.
That's so sick and sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All of that being said, Cabin Boy, one of my favorites.
I love the Letterman cameo. Other than that, the cheese stands alone there, I think.
I usually do.
But the Letterman cameo was fantastic. Like, goodbye, a monkey. All right, so...
You're one of the fancy lads, aren't you?
Jen, anything to add? We're about wrapping up here, I think.
No, I don't think so. This has been lovely, though. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Yeah, and yeah. We'll definitely get you back again. All right, so that is it, and we're going to stop talking now.
The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is published weekly and is available via iTunes or on the web at sarcasticvoyage.com. Detailed show notes, related links, and alternate file formats are also available on the web. That website, again, is sarcasticvoyage.com. Follow Matt and Al on Twitter. They are, respectively, at RobotMatt and at Algar. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com. An on-air response is guaranteed. All material contained herein is the intellectual property of Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and the featured guest, unless otherwise noted. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions, copyright 2010. He was a suburban child of the 70s.